Penguin Random House Audio presents The Lions of Fifth Avenue by Fiona Davis. Read for you by Aaron Bennett and Lisa Flanagan. For librarians everywhere. Chapter 1. New York City, 1913. She had to tell Jack. He wouldn't be pleased. As Laura Lyons returned from running errands, turning over in her head the various reactions her husband might have to her news, she spotted the beggar perched once again on the first tier of the granite steps that led to her home, seven rooms buried deep inside the palatial New York Public Library. This time, the beggar woman's appearance elicited not pity, but a primal fear. It was certainly some kind of ominous sign, one that made Laura's heart beat faster. A woman on the verge of ruin, alone and without any resources. Unloved. The beggar's black mourning gown was more tattered than it had been last week, fraying at the sleeves and hem, and her face shone with summer sweat. Every few days for the past month, she'd taken up a spot off to one side of the grand entryway under one of the towering stone lions, one of which had been named Leo Astor and the other Leo Lennox, after two of the library's founders, John Jacob Astor and James Lennox. Laura's children had admired them right off, with Harry claiming Lennox as his pet and Pearl doing the same for Astor, neither caring that the sculptures had initially been mocked in the newspapers as a cross between a dachshund and a rabbit. Only last week, Laura had just barely prevented her son from carving his initials into the sinewy rump of Leo Lennox. The beggar woman shifted, finding what shade she could. The miserable-looking child who typically filled her lap was missing. Laura wondered where he was.
Money or food, please, miss? Either will do.
Laura reached into her shopping basket and pulled out two apples. One of the library's employees would shoo the beggar away soon enough, and she was glad to have caught her in time, even if the act of offering the poor woman assistance was inspired, at least in part, by a ridiculous, superstitious bargain that existed only in Laura's mind. As if extending a kindness to someone in need would smooth the conversation ahead.
Thank you, miss.
The woman tucked the fruit away in her pockets.
God bless.
Laura hurried up the steps and into Astor Hall, past the dozens of visitors milling about, their voices echoing off the marble steps, the marble floors, the marble walls. Even the decorative bases for the bronze candelabras were made from Carrara stone sliced from the Apuan Alps. The choice kept the building cool on steamy September days like this one, even if in winter it was like walking into an icebox, particularly in the evenings when the library was closed and the furnaces only lightly fed. She turned left down the grand south-north gallery, passing under a series of globed pendants of thick, curved glass that broke up the long lines of the coffered ceiling. About halfway down the hallway, she took a right, then another, before climbing up a narrow set of stairs that led to the mezzanine-level apartment where her family had lived for the past 2 years. Their seven private rooms formed a right angle that hugged a corner of one of the library's two inner courtyards, the bedrooms and Jack's study along one side, and the kitchen, dining room, and sitting room along the other. The open area that formed the crux of the right angle, and where the stairway emerged, had become the kids' playroom, where Harry laid out his train tracks in one corner, and Pearl parked her doll's pram under the door of the dumbwaiter. When they first moved in, Jack had had to give them a stern warning when they were caught poking their heads inside the dark shaft, but soon enough, the family had settled in and adjusted to their new surroundings. The director of the library, Jack's boss, had pointed out during their orientation how the classical architecture of the building followed a progression from hard materials to soft, starting with the stone entrance hall before yielding to the wood paneling of the interior rooms. Laura had done her part to stay true to the continuum, softening the hard floors with a mishmash of oriental rugs and hanging thick drapes over the giant windows. On the fireplace mantel, she'd framed the newspaper article about their unusual living arrangements, which had been written the year they moved in. She called out the children's names as she headed to the kitchen, and the sound of their heavy stomping behind her brought a smile to her face.
Harry lost another tooth!
Pearl dashed in first, her eyes flashing with glee from scooping the news out from under her brother. Laura would have thought living in a library would turn them into a couple of bookworms, but Pearl wanted nothing to do with stories unless they involved ghosts or animals. Harry was different, although he preferred not to read himself, but rather to be read to, particularly from his worn copy of Maritime Heroes for Boys. Earlier that summer, when Jack quoted a line from one of Shakespeare's sonnets into Laura's ear in a silly falsetto while she washed the dishes, Harry had demanded to know what it meant. At his bedtime, Laura had taken down the volume from the bookcase and read some of the poems aloud to him. Harry interrupted to ask questions about the more ribald phrases, which Laura dodged as best she could. Later, when she and Jack were lying next to each other in bed, they laughed quietly about their son's natural and thoroughly innocent ear for the smuttier bits. Where Pearl could be bossy, Harry was sweet, if sometimes dim when it came to the vagaries of human nature. When Laura dropped off the children at the school on 42nd and 2nd Avenue for the first time 2 years ago, Pearl had taken a moment to analyze the groups of schoolgirls arrayed around the playground, figuring out the best approach. While Harry had recklessly stumbled over to some boys playing marbles, accidentally kicking several with his foot in the process, which resulted in a hard shove and a quick rejection. Harry, at 11, was older by 4 years, but Pearl was wiser, faster. Laura and Jack had discarded the original name they'd picked for their daughter, Beatrice, after she showed up with a white frost of fine hair covering her head, more like a little old lady than a baby girl. Her eyes weren't the vivid blue of Laura's, but more a gray, and her features and coloring gave her an ethereal appearance. "Pearl," Laura had said, and Jack had agreed, tears in his eyes. "Pearl." The last school year had been tough for Harry, who, unlike his sister, never brought friends home to play or got invited to birthday parties. Laura hoped this year would be different and he'd gain some confidence, especially since, if everything went according to plan, she wouldn't be around as much. Pearl ushered her brother into the kitchen.
"Show her the tooth, Harry."
He opened his palm, where a baby tooth sat like a rare jewel. Laura took it and held it to the light. "It's a beauty. Let's see your gap." He smiled wide, showing off the space where one of his canines had been.
"It didn't hurt at all. I was playing with it with my tongue, and suddenly, pop, it was gone."
"You're lucky you didn't choke on it," said Pearl. "I know a girl who did, and she died."
"Pearl, that's not true."
Harry looked up at Laura for confirmation. "You don't have to worry about that." Laura pocketed the tooth in her apron. "Now go get cleaned up before your father comes home." She cut up the roast beef and potatoes from the other night, glad to not have to turn on the stove in this heat, and was slicing apples for dessert just as Jack came in. Jack yanked at his tie and looked wildly around the tiny room.
"I don't have time for dinner. The payroll still needs to be done."
This wasn't the right time for her news. She gave him a quick kiss, then turned and slid the letter that she'd left out on the work table back into the pocket of her apron.
"Of course you have time for dinner. It's still early." but she knew what he meant.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?